I also want to thank you, our listening audience, for tuning in to Outsourcers. We hope you've enjoyed the conversation and that you'll join us again next week for another edition of Outsourcers. Thanks very much. Good night.
It is 30 seconds after 7 o'clock, and you are listening to KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. And 7 o'clock on a Monday night means it's time for the Opera Box. Well, good evening and welcome to KGNU's Opera Box. I'm your host, Ron Nadell. With Valentine's Day this week, I thought it'd be appropriate to have a playlist of operatic love scenes. Strongly romantic music, effectively manipulating our emotions and the sympathy with the characters and the drama, like this duet from Act Two of André Chenier. And music of Mozart, Francesco Silea, Wagner, Carl Nielsen, Richard Strauss, and of course, Puccini. Opera delivers passion and ecstasy better than anything. So grab your honey and join me for tonight's operatic Valentine's. Duet from Act Two of André Chenier. That's the music of Umberto Giordano. Chenier was an influential poet during the French Revolution who came under suspicion of Robespierre and the Revolutionary Tribunal. In the opera, Chenier has a secret admirer, Madeleine de Coigny, who's been sending him letters, and he has loved her secretly too. In the scene we just heard, they finally meet. Life during the revolution is now unpredictable. They openly declare their love for each other, however much time they may have. In that recording, we heard Placido Domingo as Chenier, Renata Scotto as De Coigny, and James Levine conducted the National Philharmonic Orchestra. And here we are, about 4.5 minutes after 7 o'clock in the Opera Box on KGNU. And this is your host, Ron Nadell, with a program of operatic Valentines, great love duets. Operatic love scenes are contrasted by the circumstances of the stories and the characters, and so they can be sweet and tender, affectionate and loving, passionate and sensual, or heroic and inspiring. In the opera Adriana Lecouvreur by Francesco Silea, which is loosely based on the famous 18th century French actress. She has many admirers competing for her attention: a prince, a theater manager, and Maurizio, a soldier in the service of the Count of Saxony. She's in love with the soldier, but isn't sure he loves her. She's not aware that he is, in fact, the Count of Saxony, and the plot is complicated by political intrigue, jealousies, love triangles, conspiracies. But in this duet from Act One, Maurizio finds Adriana backstage prior to a performance. She is coy at first, as you'll hear, but when she sees that he is ardently in love with her, she admits of her feelings for him and tells him she's going to act on stage that night to him, and to him alone.
Cosa lieta!
Ed il ministro, ed il conte di Sassonia!
Potentato! Promette non mantiene!
Conoscerlo vorrei!
Perché?
Senza tradirmi, piegarlo ben saprei! In favor vostro!
Grazie! È un uomo pericoloso!
Lo so, tutte le donne l'amano!
Io son geloso!
Facciamo!
E ben di me parlatevi!
Guardi
The love duet from Act One of Adriana Lecouvreur by Francesco Silea. And once again, we heard the great Placido Domingo, this time as Maurizio. Renata Scotto as Adriana, and James Levine conducted the Philharmonia Orchestra. 11.5 minutes now after 7 o'clock. You're in the Opera Box at KGNU, and I'm your host, Ron Nadel, with Valentines of Operatic Love Scenes. Now, this next love scene is from the opera Saul and David by Carl Nielsen, ripped from the pages of the Book of Solomon. We all know David from the Bible. He slew Goliath and became the leader of the Israelites. But at this point in the story, David is just a young soldier in Saul's army. And in this scene from Act One, David and Saul discussed the coming war with the Philistines. After their conversation, Saul left, but his daughter Michal has remained. The sun is setting, and they nervously look at each other. David admits that he once saw Michal from afar and watched her with the other girls. Since that day, he can't stop thinking about her. And she says that she saw him then as well and wanted to talk to him. They've kept their feelings inside, but now their passions take over and they openly express their feelings, running into each other's arms.
See you.
Oh, those crazy kids, Michal and David. The love scene from Saul and David, music of Carl Nielsen. And in that recording, we heard Aga Haugland as David and Tina Kieberg as Michal. Jorgen Klint conducted the Danish National Radio Symphony. You're listening to The Opera Box on KGNU, and I'm your host, Ron Nadell, with a playlist of operatic valentines, love scenes from opera for Valentine's Week. And be sure to stay with me after the Opera Box for a Classic Monday. I'm going to have the 20th in my series of programs on The Symphony, and it will be the second part of our highlights of Dmitri Shostakovich. That's at 8 p.m., right here on KGNU. Our next pair of lovers provide us with one of the most exciting heroic love duets in opera. It's from the last scene of Siegfried, which is the third of Wagner's four opera epic. The Nibelung's Ring. Siegfried is an orphan and never knew his parents. He was raised by a malevolent dwarf and has never seen another human. In this scene, Siegfried has just awakened the sleeping Brunhilde. She was a Valkyrie warrior goddess, daughter of the king of the gods. When she was faced with a difficult decision, she disobeyed her father Wotan and was punished, losing her immortality, locked in a magic sleep, and surrounded by fire, until someone wakens her. Because only a hero would be brave enough to jump through the fire, and that man would be destined to be her husband. Brunhilde, once awakened, tries to explain all this to Siegfried, but he's just overcome by her beauty and her bearing. He awakened her with a kiss, but she has awakened new feelings in him. When he says the world seems to be swirling, you can hear the orchestra swirling around his words. His youthful ardor soon awakens a new passion in Brunhilde. The ordeals of their lives have prepared them both for this moment and their destiny. What is their destiny? To save the world. Their duet swells to a powerful climax as they fall into each other's arms. And we're going to hear the great Wagnerian duo of Birgit Nilsson and Wolfgang Wingassen, the love duet from Act 3 of Siegfried.
Augen, Augen, Wunder, Wunder.
The exciting love duet from the end of Siegfried, the third of four operas from Richard Wagner's Nibelung's Ring tetralogy. We heard the great Birgit Nilsson as Brunhilde and Wolfgang Wingassen as Siegfried. Georg Schulte conducted the Vienna Philharmonic here at about 26 minutes before 8 o'clock in the Opera Box at KGNU. And I'm your host, Ron Nadell. You're listening to my Valentine's program of operatic love scenes. We're going to change modes from heroic, strident love to endearing, innocent love with the love duet from Act Two of Der Rosenkavalier, Richard Strauss's delightful romantic comedy. It is set in 18th century Vienna. Now, young Sophie is going to be in an arranged marriage to a boorish old baron. A young man, Octavian, dressed all in silver livery, comes bearing a silver rose as a formal proposal from the baron. Octavian is the Rosenkavalier of the title. Sophie's family and servants are filled with anticipation. Trumpets announce his arrival, and he enters and kneels before her as he delivers the rose. But when he looks up into Sophie's eyes, the two young people instantly fall in love. Both are confused and overcome by the power and emotions of the moment. The role of Octavian here is sung by a mezzo-soprano, which adds greatly to the fun of this opera because there's one scene where Octavian disguises himself as a girl, which means a woman plays the role of a young man pretending to be a girl at one point. Anyway, why did Strauss write this role for a mezzo-soprano? In other words, why did he write it for two women in this duet? It'll become obvious when you hear it.
Thank you.
The lovely duet from Act Two of Der Rosenkavalier by Richard Strauss. We heard Yvonne Minton mezzo as Octavian and Helen Donath soprano as Sophie. And Georg Schulte conducted the Vienna Philharmonic. 17 minutes before 8 o'clock, you're in the Opera Box on KGNU. I'm your host, Ron Nadell, and we're celebrating Valentine's Day a little early with great romantic duets, and our next one is from Mozart's Così fan tutte. Così fan tutte roughly translates to Thus to Everyone. It's a farcical opera about two men, Fernando and Guglielmo, who pretend to go off to war and then, in disguise, attempt to woo each other's lover, Dorabella and Fiordaligi, respectively, to test their fidelity. Well, in this scene from Act Two, Guglielmo is alone with Dorabella and attempts to woo her. She doesn't resist him very strongly. What harm could a little flirting do until Fernando returns from war, she thinks. She gives him a heart-shaped locket, which happens to have Fernando's picture inside. And if you want to know how all this works out, you're going to have to listen to the whole opera. This is the duet from Così fan tutte.
Quieto a me ci va.
the love duet, I should say the flirtation duet from Act Two of Così fan tutte by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. We heard Renee Fleming as Dorabella and Olaf Barr as Guglielmo with Georg Schulte conducting the Chamber Orchestra of Europe. And I'm going to conclude tonight's pre-Valentine Day Love Fest with two contrasting duets by Giacomo Puccini from his operas Tosca and La Bohème. Now, in Act One of Tosca, the artist Mario Cavaradossi has been painting a portrait of the Madonna for the Church of the San Andrea de Valle. His hot-blooded lover Tosca is jealous of the painting. The face in the portrait looks like someone she has seen in the church, and she is suspicious. In their duet, Cavaradossi reassures her that he loves her alone. Their passion is palpable, and she asks him to forgive her jealousy. Then, in the first act of La Bohème, Rodolfo, a starving poet, sings with Mimi, a threadbare seamstress. They have just met in his garret, which he shares with three friends. Rodolfo is going to join his friends at the Café Momus, and he invites her to come along. She goes to the window to look down at the street to see the waiting friends, and the moonlight illuminates her face. Rodolfo is overcome with emotion at her simple beauty in the moonlight. Who wouldn't be? And their duet soars as they experience the ecstasy of emerging love. He holds out his arm, and as they leave the room, he looks at her and says, "Tell me you love me." "I love you," she replies.
Thank you.
braccio, mia piccina.
The beautiful duet at the conclusion of Act One of La Bohème by Giacomo Puccini. And we heard in that recording Placido Domingo as Rodolfo and Montserrat Caballé as Mimi. And Georg Schulte conducted the London Philharmonic. And before that, we started the set with the love duet from Act One of Tosca. And for that recording, we heard Jose Carreras as Mario Cavaradossi and Montserrat Caballé as Tosca. Colin Davis conducted the orchestra of Covent Garden. Well, this is your host, Ron Nadell. I want to thank you for joining me for our pre-Valentine Love Fest. Stay tuned for a classic Monday here on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
Hear the voices of the silenced majority.
You can't train men to kill, send them out to kill, celebrate them killing, and then expect them not to bring that war back home.
Linking Iraq with terrorism is a lie.
The attitude of journalists seems to be, we have freedom of dissent here, so you protesters just shut up.
As a member of Congress, it is a great source of concern that we would move on the path of war without any proof.
You know, they present the military as our only way to succeed in life because we come from a community infested with poverty and drugs and all of these things.
We gather here today against a formidable machine, but they all can be rendered powerless when democracy is taken to the streets.
Tune in to Democracy Now! Weekday mornings, 7 to 8, here on KGNU 88.5 FM.
Good evening and welcome everyone to a Classic Monday. I'm still your host, Ron Nadell, with part 20 of my series of programs tracing the development of the symphony from its Baroque origins in the Concerto Grosso of the 1600s to today. Tonight's segment is the second of two programs highlighting Dmitri Shostakovich. Considered the most important symphonist of the 20th century, his life and work are symbolic of the victory of artistic expression over authoritarian oppression. To find out how, join me for a Classic Monday this evening. Shostakovich lived from 1906 to 1975, and last week we followed his symphonic growth from his very original, mature First Symphony when he was only 19 years old to his reactions to Stalin's oppression of the arts. Lenin said art belongs to the people, and Stalin interpreted that literally. Experimentation and innovation in art was elitist and thus strictly forbidden. At the time of Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony, his recent opera had been denounced as decadent, with thinly veiled threats against his life. We heard last week how he complied with an obediently patriotic symphony, which also contained musical clues of defiance of Stalin. Thereafter, though, Shostakovich composed under the fears of denouncement, arrest, and even execution. Then, in 1948, charges were brought against many composers, and Shostakovich and Prokofiev were among them. Shostakovich's Eighth and Ninth Symphonies were specifically denounced for formalism. All the composers were summoned to a week-long meeting in Moscow. One by one, they stood and abased themselves with humble apologies. They became unpersons. Shostakovich was fired from the conservatory with the loss of income and status. He wouldn't write another symphony for 5 years. He resorted to writing film music and official works which demonstrated rehabilitation, but he still composed private works for himself, which went into a desk drawer. Then, in the summer of 1953, he took up some sketches dating back to 1946, and he began to compose his 10th Symphony in four essentially traditional movements. Like the fifth from last week, prior to writing the 10th, Shostakovich wrote four songs called Four Monologues to Poems by Pushkin. And like the fifth, he used melodic material from one of the songs in the 10th, providing clues to Shostakovich's inner life at the time and the meaning of the symphony. If the fifth was about life under Stalin's terror, the 10th seems to be about Shostakovich and identity. The first movement begins almost with a sad once upon a time